You're listening to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP, on 101.5 FM.
Moving on, we're heading over to Indonesia and talking about Tokopedia, which apparently is Indonesia's largest online store. It was just leaked on Friday that the details of 15 million users registered on Tokopedia are basically out into the public. Now, the attacker claims the data was obtained in an intrusion that took place in March of 2020 and is just a small part of the site's entire user database that he or she actually obtained. The leaker said that he was sharing the 15 million user sample in the hopes somebody could help crack the user passwords so that they could be used to access user accounts, meaning he is looking for help to basically decode the passwords that he was able to steal in an encrypted manner, and here we are. Now, this file was a Postgre database dump, that's the name of the database, PostgreSQL, and it contains user information such as full names, emails, phone numbers, hash passwords, dates of birth, and Tokopedia profile-related accounts, including account creation dates, last logins, email activation codes, password reset codes, location details, messenger IDs, hobbies, education, about me fields, and a heck of a lot more. So that is a very serious issue. And so to my users, or excuse me, my listeners in Indonesia, and I do actually have a pretty decent presence there, heads up to you. Moving on, we're going to head on down to Costa Rica and talk about Banco BCR. This apparently is the state-owned bank of Costa Rica. Now, hackers are claiming to have gained access to the network of Banco BCR and stole 11 million credit card credentials along with other data. The attack was allegedly conducted by the operators of the Maze ransomware gang, who have been behind numerous cyber attacks and basically on very high-profile victims as well, including cyber insurer Chubb, Hammersmith Medicine Research, Cognizant, and a whole bunch of others. Now, on this data leak site, particularly because Maze puts out a site where they give proof to the world that they actually hit it, they claim to have gained access to the network in August of 2019, but did not proceed with encrypting the devices as the possible damage was too high, according to them. Maze's claim that the bank never secured their network once again gained access to the bank's network in February of 2020, and here we are. So if you bank at Banco BCR, heads up to you. Moving on down under, we're heading to Australia, and we're going to be talking about their Home Affairs Department. They had a data breach revealing the personal details of 774,000 migrants and people aspiring to migrate to Australia, including partial names and the outcomes of their applications. Searches by Guardian Australia revealed the public database contained 774,326 unique user IDs and 189,426 completed expressions of interest, searchable as far back as 2014. Other information available includes the applicant's birth country, age, qualifications for immigrating, marital status, and the outcome of applications. So if you have attempted to migrate or have migrated to Australia, heads up, you might have been breached. Moving on, let's talk about the Parkview Medical Center in the state of Colorado. Attackers have infected the infrastructure of Parkview Medical Center, the largest health center in Pueblo County, Colorado, with cryptocurrency ransomware. Citing a hospital employee, Fox News reported on April 24th that Meditech, the Parkview Medical Center's system for restoring patient information, was infected with ransomware and rendered inoperable. The hospital confirmed the incident in a statement, and here we are. No honor among thieves. Hitting hospitals during a pandemic. That's awesome, guys. Moving on, let's head on up to Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and talk about a company called Civic Smart. They sell parking meters capable of processing mobile payments, hardware and software used in enforcing parking rules, and mobile apps used by motorists and government employees. They got hit in March, apparently, with a form of ransomware that is known as R-Evil. Now, messages posted to the website on which the hackers name their victims and leak stolen files in an attempt to get ransom payments suggest that Civic Smart paid an unspecified amount to have its files decrypted. That's a huge issue, and we'll see where that goes. But if you've used a parking meter from Civic Smart, heads up to you. Moving on, we're going to be talking about Chegg. This is an online learning platform. They confirmed their third data breach in the past 3 years. So good job, guys. The education tech giant, which last year was acquired by Thinkful for $80 million, said hackers stole 700 current and former employee records, including their names and social security numbers. The company has more than 1,400 full-time employees at the start of this year, so about half of their employee workforce just got hit. You had one job, guys. One job. Moving on, we're going to be talking about Tom Berkowitz Trucking in Massachusetts. This is a small business. They got a ransomware hit, and so far more than 781 megabytes of the company's data has been released onto the internet, basically as a proof of concept, and it appears once again that the Maze ransomware gang is the ones behind this. Moving on, we're going to be talking about pharmaceuticals giant ExecuPharm. They got hit with the ransomware incident on March 13th, and social security numbers, taxpayer IDs, driver's license numbers, passport numbers, bank account details, credit card numbers, NI numbers, and beneficiary information was dumped. So if you have anything to do with ExecuPharm, heads up to you. Moving on, we're going to be talking about the entertainment and food venue Main Event. I think this is one of those like large warehouse type places where you can go get like a decent meal and play like bocce ball and bowling and all that kind of stuff. They actually had a data breach, but I don't know much about it because I've only been able to find one website that is reporting this, and that is mostly behind a paywall. But what I do know is Main Event doesn't know how many customers were affected or who is responsible for this. So if I have more news on that, I will give you an update. But heads up, I know Main Event, the restaurant venue, is just all over the United States. Moving on, we're heading back to the House of Lords in the United Kingdom. Now, the House of Lords apparently failed to broadcast proceedings about a week ago Wednesday following problems with its virtual arrangements. And this is actually interesting. Data breaches were cited after the mobile phone numbers of some members of the House of Lords were read out on Tuesday when they entered or exited the session on Microsoft Teams, which is the app that they are using to basically have their meetings, obviously due to the pandemic. As a consequence, the House of Lords said it's sitting on basically its Wednesday meetings are not going to be broadcast live until they figure that out. And I find that really interesting because this would be the equivalent here in the United States of, let's say, all of the U.S. senators, all 100 of them, getting into a meeting on Microsoft Teams and having their cell phone numbers exposed to the general public. So if you want the personal cell phone number of your senator, encourage them to use Microsoft Teams, apparently. Moving on, we are going to be talking about two different COVID-19 apps because, of course, we have to talk about this. The first one we're going to be talking about is the COVID-19 Alert app. Now, this was developed in the Netherlands, and they suffered a data breach a couple of weeks ago when its source code was published online for the purpose of government shortlisting. Now, the rushed action resulted in about 200 names, email addresses, and hash passwords from another project being exposed. As we rush to get things done in the pandemic, we need really to take the time to slow down and verify things because just the development of this app basically caused a data breach, and that's a very serious issue when we are dealing with sensitive medical information, and we are not done. Because now we're going to be talking about a company called Geo, and they have a subdivision called Reliance Geo. Now, Geo is India's largest cellular provider. They are the largest mobile phone provider, and I am not going to do or I'm not going where you think I'm going with this is what I meant to say in terms of their cellular network. They created a coronavirus symptom checker app. And now you know where I'm going with this. A security error within Reliance Geo's coronavirus symptom checker app exposed its core database to the internet without a password. So this symptom checker app was launched by Geo late in March, and it allows users basically from their phone to check to see if they've got the symptoms of COVID-19. The security error was first observed by a security researcher on May 1st, who then contacted TechCrunch to verify and notify Geo, the company. Now, TechCrunch contacted Reliance Geo, and the database that contains reports of users' COVID-19 tests were taken offline ASAP. The leaked database included millions of results starting from April 17th to the time that it was taken offline, probably March 1st through 3rd. It also includes details of users' age, gender, symptoms, health data of the people who signed in to create the profile, and more. The database also contained details such as a person's user agent, user's precise location, if they allowed the app to track the location. And by default, a lot of these apps are just asking for permission to do that. Based on the sample obtained, TechCrunch confirmed that they were able to identify home, basically users' home locations based on the latitude and longitude records present in the database. And this is a very serious data breach because if you think about it, this is the exact problem that we have as we are rushing to market, whether it's a test, a vaccine, or even an app to track this. If we are not putting proper safeguards in place, the last thing we want is a breach like this getting dumped. Imagine if this was here in the United States or whatever country you're in, and it had millions and millions of your citizens, neighbors, families, friends, people you don't know, and this got exposed. You may know sensitive information on them, and therefore that might actually make a stigma or create some kind of stigma against you or the person that's there. If you've had coronavirus and you've gotten over it and you're fine, but this database that got leaked revealed that you did have it, there may be people that don't want to be around you. That's a very serious issue. We have a lot of laws governing the practice of protecting personal health information, as I'm sure India does as well, as they have a large government too. This is a huge, huge problem, and I'm curious to see where this goes. But as we are developing these apps, and now we have two around the globe that have had data breaches, we need to be careful, because if the researchers can get it, so can the attackers. And with all of this, that was the highlights, mind you, the highlights, and we are about 18 minutes into this segment already. Those are the highlights for your breaches of the week.
You're listening to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP, on 101.5 FM. And now for the Deep Dive segment, where we take a closer and deeper look at a cybersecurity, cyber warfare, or technology issue around us. And if you have any suggestions for a Deep Dive segment or something you'd like me to dive into, you can once again find me on Facebook and Twitter at Nick A. ESP. Again, that's Nick A. ESP. Or you can send an email to questions@securityfanatics.com. That's questions@securityfanatics.com. I am more than happy to take a look at it. And if it meets our standards, we are more than happy to do a deep dive on it. So let's begin.
Hey, everybody. Nick Espinoza from the COVID-19 Cyber Threat Coalition here. And I have a very special guest for everybody today. And I think you guys are really going to enjoy this. I am joined by Keith Doomling. He is the Director of Cybersecurity for Technology Protection for the Cleveland Clinic, one of the best hospital systems here in the United States. And obviously, we're going to be talking about the coronavirus, COVID-19, and cybersecurity. And so, Keith, thank you very much for joining me here.
Thank you for having me, Nick. I'm greatly appreciative of the opportunity.
And we absolutely appreciate it as well. Now, before we dive into the whole nerd side of this, I want to know how the Cleveland Clinic is just doing, its staff in general, as it's holding up during this pandemic. I know that every hospital here in the United States is pretty much slammed. And how are you guys handling this?
I mean, as an enterprise, I think we're definitely banding together, doing what it takes to protect ourselves and serve the community as we always do. There's been an incredible amount of hard work by the caregivers who are providing direct patient care. And those in the operational support areas, such as myself, are incredibly humbled and proud to be part of it and support them to do what they do best every day.
Yeah. I have to imagine it's just a tough situation to be in right now. And so I know that I think people just around the world that are not in healthcare are beyond grateful for the front line. You guys are in the trenches, and so it is greatly, greatly appreciated. And I'm glad that you guys are holding up as well as you are. It's a tough situation. And with that, let's talk about the threats out there, because everybody talks about the healthcare side of it and what our wonderful doctors and nurses and practitioners are doing, but you know, a lot of us don't really talk about the incoming cyber threat and how cybersecurity is keeping everybody protected. I mean, we've seen a complete rise in COVID-related threats basically getting out there. So what is the Cleveland Clinic seeing, and what are you guys doing to combat this as your title of Director of Cybersecurity for Technology Protection?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. I mean, we've seen a significant uptick in the amount of COVID-19 threats that have been targeted towards the environment. And probably the last, I think we noticed the big uptick in about 60 days ago, mm-hmm. When we started receiving an increased amount of specific spear phishing and targeted threats. We've also seen a large rise in malicious websites that pop up and attempt to provide pseudo-useful information for our caregivers as they seek different ways to innovate and care for the patients that they see. So there's a lot of different threats coming in a lot of different vectors, and I suspect a lot of the individuals in the coalition are also seeing that as well. Most of them are traditionally via email and web, but then we're also seeing some very targeted scams, such as direct messaging via text. And then we've also received some abnormal items that have been sent to us under the guise of research and things of that nature. So there's a lot of different threats of different types that are coming at us, and we have to be incredibly vigilant in these times, because obviously a disruption in reliability and availability of our systems is a significant issue in these times, as it always was, but even more so now.
Yeah. And that's actually really interesting, because obviously here in the coalition, we are seeing an explosion in this as well. But the one thing that I don't think a lot of the general public considers is that if you are going to be targeting a hospital, you're not just targeting it with the generic World Health Organization or CDC kind of stuff that, you know, everybody, every user on the planet's going to get. It's more specific in the sense that if I wouldn't be getting research, for example. Nobody would be sending me fake malicious research that would infect my machine. And I find it really interesting, though, because as you are seeing this uptick, we have to talk about the workforce. I mean, hospitals have a massive amount of employees, a lot of them, you know, that are obviously on the front lines in the hospitals, in the buildings, dealing with, sick patients, but many are working remote. And so how are you balancing security and accessibility as you shift workers that can be remote, basically sending them home and having them remote in, obviously understanding a lot of different vulnerabilities with home networks and all of that? What's the Cleveland Clinic doing about that?
Yeah, it's definitely a complex situation. We're lucky that our CISO and our other executive leadership has long embraced a program of providing very specific training towards caregivers of different types. So we were lucky that we had that strong foundation to build on top of. But, in the wake of the rise of COVID-19, we've been providing some additional enhanced education to our caregivers, some scenario-based situations so that they understand how to respond, enabling our service desk to assist caregivers as they call. And then we've also been enhancing our endpoint hygiene so that we make sure that all the controls that need to be in place are in place and are operating at an optimal state. So we're trying to leverage kind of a layered approach from a training and education standpoint, but then also a technology standpoint to really provide the protective controls necessary, both for those caregivers that are on site and those that have been reallocated to work from either other locations or work from home.
Right. Now, and I think that's actually a really good point as you're balancing that. But one of the things that has got to be super difficult is, you've got a lot of people on the front lines that have to use technology, and we're in the middle of basically a global wide emergency, if you will, onslaught of patients, onslaught of panicked people and all of that. How do you start training and educating that workforce in the middle of them having to use the technology they've used every day to suddenly spot these phishing emails, to see these incoming threats and all of that? We're seeing an explosion of phishing attempts and everything that we talked about using coronavirus or COVID-19 as a lure. But when you've got that pandemic that's out there, how are you balancing that with education? That's got to be a tough thing.
Yeah, it definitely is. We have a lot of the traditional mechanisms to communicate information, but our organization is lucky that we have a tiered huddle process where individuals will meet with their teams on a daily basis through a stand-up mechanism, and they can provide observations that then percolate up through the environment and are delivered to the right individual to respond. And then we can also disseminate information down through the huddle process. Mm-hmm. So we're able to make an observation on a Monday, and then if it's well-crafted and articulated by Tuesday, that information guidance on how to avoid those threats can be disseminated the next business day. In addition to that, we've set up a number of internal resources, briefing mechanisms, and other locations for caregivers to get that vital information so that they can continue to do what they do best without the threat of the cyber threats impacting their operations.
Yeah, and I have to imagine that's a Herculean effort. And the more you compartmentalize to send it down into these groups, it's got to be a lot easier to control that flow of information. Just if I'm thinking about, like, let's say a zero trust infrastructure, for example, now you've got groups that, let's say one group's not necessarily getting that message or learning as well as the other groups, you now have the ability to not have that spread across the entire hospital. Am I understanding that right in that sense?
Yep, that's an accurate.
Yeah, because you've got statement. I mean, how many employees do you know roughly that the Cleveland Clinic has or so?
We have around 75,000 individuals.
Wow.
Filling different roles.
Right. So
spread out throughout the United States and throughout the world too. So this is a global enterprise, and there are different regional threats that we also have to contend
with. Right, right. And you do everything from the frontline healthcare to also research, from what I understand as well.
That
right?
is correct. We have a very, very large research institute that we're very proud of.
Yeah, yeah. No, and I know it's one of the finest in the world, which is why I think it's such a thrill to talk to you here. And something you said a little earlier, interesting about that I thought was really interesting was, you know, as you're securing this technology and, you know, for this shift home and educating your users, you know, one of the biggest problems that we have just in cybersecurity in general for getting healthcare is IoT or Internet of Things. And I know that hospitals are just replete with various IoT healthcare equipment and all of that. You know, as we are looking at, like, say, securing that down, I have no doubt that the Cleveland Clinic, under your direction, has got a lot of really good security policies for IoT in place. You know, has that really changed by virtue of the coronavirus or the pandemic in general?
Well, there's been a lot of scrutiny on IoT devices, and I'm lucky that there's a number of peers in cybersecurity. There's another gentleman who leads a group that their sole purpose is IoT security, and his group and my group work very closely together. But we've definitely worked hard over the last couple of weeks to put in additional visibility controls and then protective controls around some of the more sensitive IoT devices, so that we can, you know, obviously make sure that, you know, any type of threat to them is neutralized before it ever materializes. But he's also worked significantly with our supply chain operations to make sure that we, you know, really start to embed cybersecurity into the DNA of the acquisition process, so that we're not trying to secure something after it's procured, but we're working throughout even the ideation phase and then the, you know, the build phase and then beyond to really embed security into that from the get-go.
Yeah, and that's honestly great to hear, because, you know, if you're looking at what a lot of the cybersecurity industry is talking about, specifically when it comes to frameworks like NIST and others, you know, we've seen a huge rise in supply chain hacking, you know, and some of your medical competitors, for lack of a better term, you know, got caught up in the American medical billing thing last year and had a massive disclosure, and that's purely, you know, looking at your supply chain and not doing that due diligence. And you know, so doing, having that vetting process, I think, for IoT is just a super important thing. And I'm really glad to see that you guys are on it. And with 75,000 users, I mean, I have to imagine you have an army, you know, of cybersecurity professionals and just nerds in general that are watching the barn.
We have a large number of very talented individuals. So we're definitely lucky. You know, Cleveland, sometimes it's difficult to attract the talent. So we put a lot of effort behind building the talent local and investing in our people. Our people in cybersecurity are the best asset we have from a cyber standpoint because of their professionalism and their dedication to what they do. So really, it's the protection that we're able to provide is a testament to their efforts and their professionalism.
Yeah, no, that's great. That's really great. Plus, you also have access to the Cleveland Indians and the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, so that definitely doesn't hurt.
Well, don't forget the Browns, you know.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just went to the Hall of Fame for the first time last year on a speaking engagement, and it was super cool, super cool.
Yep.
But anyway, I want to bring up one more thing too, because obviously, you know, I'm here with the COVID-19 Cyber Threat Coalition, and, you know, what we are doing is we have about 100 million or so roughly indicators of compromise that we are getting on a daily basis, and we are working furiously to vet all of this kind of stuff, you know, to supply it to hospitals. And so I'm curious to know if the Cleveland Clinic is, you know, is fully using our block list, and you know, what other kinds of sources, you know, for intelligence. You know, how can groups like ours help somebody like an organization like the Cleveland Clinic, you know, to help maintain its safety and security and all of that?
Excellent question. We're beginning to phase in the blacklist and the IoT, the indicator or compromise list into our protective controls. We have a number of open and closed sources of intel that we leverage across a number of different technology platforms, but I think one of the most appealing things about the coalition is that it is a product agnostic group that has come together to share intel that is easily distributed. It can be used in many different forms and fashions. And it's a combination of what's observed by its members. So you have a distributed array of input points that then will continue to enrich and enhance the product that other individuals within the cybersecurity community can leverage. So it's a great effort, and I certainly am proud to be part of it. And I tip my hat to all those who came together to found this coalition, because it truly is a great cause to be part of.
Yeah, and I just have to say, from my own personal side, I was there, I want to say, within the first few days or so, give or take, of this being founded. And it has been amazing to see it and grow. And, you know, at 37-ish hundred, you know, members, we're all oftentimes from competing brands or technologies or services and all of that. And we all put that to the side. You know, I mean, I'm not here as my own company. I'm here to help the world. And I'm so glad that, you know, the Cleveland Clinic and others are starting to ingest this block list that we have, you know, because this is pretty much, I think, a labor of love. And the nice part, I think, about it overall, and I don't know if this is your experience with the people that you work with, but just being in cybersecurity, at the end of the day, we're a service industry. We're there to help others. We're there to defend others.
And thank you so much for tuning in this week. It was another fun show, and I think we covered a lot of really good stuff. And I hope you guys enjoyed it as much as I did. It was a really good time, and I hope you keep tuning in. Thank you very much for listening to the Deep Dive Radio Show here with Nick Espinoza. And if you have any comments, suggestions, questions, absolutely anything, once again, you can find me on Facebook and Twitter at Nick A. ESP. Again, that's Nick A. ESP. And you can always send an email to questions@securityfanatics.com. Don't be shy. I love the feedback. We've been having a great time with the show. And as always, stay safe and stay online, everyone. Thanks for listening.